Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Secure Your Life, real talk about real life. I'm glad to be with you tonight. I am your host, Diamond Taylor. Don't cuss, don't fuss. Credit is a must. You will learn how to get out of debt, get out of trouble, no holds bar, to end your financial nightmare and take control of your future when money matters. We have a great show for you tonight. I have a wonderful guest, and we're going to start our show off by welcoming you, and I want to tell you we have some great things going on with Secure Your Life show. We're going to start our book club tonight with my special guest. So before I do anything else, I would like to introduce him and have him join us on the line. Tonight, we're going to talk about the great book, Rich is a State of Mind. And my guest tonight is Robert Geniak. Hello, Robert. How are you?
Good evening, Diamond. How are you?
I am great. It is so wonderful to have you back on the show. Talking about this wonderful, great book. And I'm going to let you just dive right in to our discussion because you are one of the best authors on the subject of finance that takes it from where anybody and everybody can understand exactly how to change their life and change their future. So I'm going to give you the floor right now, introduce yourself, where you're from, and how can we learn more about Rich as a State of Mind?
Well, before I launch into that, Diamond, thank you very much for the kind words about my book. I certainly do appreciate that. And for your listeners who may not have caught us the first time around, my name is Robert Geniak, and I'm currently based in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and I'm the author of the best-selling book, Rich as a State of Mind, which is available in both a Canadian and U.S. edition. And Rich is a State of Mind is a novel about personal finance seen through the eyes of a slightly dysfunctional American family. And in the case of the Canadian edition, of course, a slightly dysfunctional Canadian family. And every time I say that to somebody, I get pretty much the exact same response. I kind of get a silly little grin on their face, and they look at me and they go, so you've met my family.
Exactly.
Because we all tend to think our families are slightly dysfunctional in some way. Now, one thing I generally leave out of my bio is that I've got a BA in psychology from Wilfrid Laurier University up here in Ontario. And because of that, I understand a little bit about the concept of dysfunction, and the family at the heart of my story is not that kind of dysfunctional. They're the kind of family, you know, Diamond, where somebody forgets to send a birthday card, so somebody doesn't show up for Thanksgiving dinner by the July 4th barbecue, nobody's talking to each other. It's that kind of family dynamic. And there are four central characters in the book: Richard Jarvis, who's the mentor, his niece and nephew, James and Joyce, who are in their 20s trying to come to grips with money, jobs, just out of school, finance, what does it all mean, goals, insurance, 401ks, IRAs, why do I need all of this stuff, how do I use a credit card, all of the things that we all in our 20s pretty much struggled through, and in many cases didn't struggle, but at least we had to address them for the first time.
Right.
And so Richard is trying to share this story with his family across a generation, because Richard, he's kind of a quirky individual. You know, the kind of individual who every family has one that everyone thinks is a little bit different than the rest, so they just kind of shunt them aside. Well, mm-hmm. as we all know, and many of us know individuals like that, they typically are the smartest individuals in their family circle. It's just they wanted to do things differently, had different points of view. And in the case of Richard, the central character of the book, that was definitely him. So much so that his niece and nephew, James and Joyce, as the book opens up, have just discovered they have an Uncle Richard.
Oh, wow.
So there's a slight communication problem going on within the Jarvis family dynamic. When you get into your 20s and you find out that your parents have a sibling that they never told you about. And so they did. I think, Diamond, what any of us would do, they went off to find him, found out he lived in the same town they lived in a hand-built log cabin on the edge of town, with a Ford F-150 pickup truck in the driveway and a satellite dish on the roof. He wasn't what they expected at all. And over the course of getting to know each other, he struck a deal with them that said he would teach them everything that he knew under one condition, that they in turn took that and shared it with everybody that they know. If they only wanted to use it for their own personal gain, he wasn't interested in teaching them anything. And they struck a deal, and the book examines the next 13 months in all of their lives.
Wow. That is amazing. So the characters in your book sound so much like the average family.
In some ways, I think they are. We know we should be doing better things with our money. We know that we need to pay attention a little bit more. And one of the things when I talk to people or give presentations about my work is that all I want to do is encourage everybody, not that they have to become a student of personal finance, but that every once in a while it's okay to put down the remote control and turn off the Amazing Race and pay attention to your goals for your life, of which a little tiny slice will have something to do with your personal finances. That I tell people all the time, the biggest goals you're ever going to have in your life have nothing to do with money. They have to do with life in general. Do those goals require some form of financial backing? Sure, for some of them, but many of them don't, in terms of our personal relationships, our relationships with our spouses, with our kids, with our parents. There's never a money concept with any of that. But for some goals, if you have a goal to travel, to go to Europe, maybe attend a sporting event, sure, then you need some money in order to do that. And it's the great mix of all these things combined together which make life interesting.
Okay, I have a question. I'm pretty sure those who, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Secure Your Life. And tonight we're talking about best-selling author, sought-after speaker, Robert Geniak, and he has this great book called Rich is a State of Mind. And we talked a little bit about the main character and how he gave wisdom to his niece and nephew, who didn't even know he existed until they were in their early 20s. My question to you is, when you created this book, what was your inspiration?
The inspiration for creating the book, Diamond, came out of a conversation I had with my financial advisor probably the better part of 15 years ago. And I asked him one day, I said, how did I end up getting so lucky? And he looked at me, kind of laughed, and said, what do you mean? I said, that's all I've been hearing from people for about the last 6 months. You guys are so lucky. You guys are so lucky. And I didn't really understand it at that point. I said, so what's the luck thing? He said, oh, he said that. And I laughed a little bit, and I said, explain. He said, here's something that I've learned in my time as both financial advisor and just in life in general. When you start to do the things that other people say they want to do but aren't, you got lucky.
Oh.
And I thought about it for a little bit, and I went, okay, let me file that one away. And the next time I heard that from somebody who said, you know, Robert, you're really lucky, I stopped him for a second. I said, okay, explain that, this concept of luck. How did I get lucky? Well, you know, you travel here, you do this. And I went, okay. So those were conscious decisions. How did I get lucky? Nobody passed away. Nobody left me an unknown sum of money. I didn't win the lottery. I don't have a six-figure income. So explain the luck to me. And he said, well, you're getting to do all of the things you want to do. And I said, right, because I worked with a financial advisor. We built a plan, set some goals, worked pretty diligently at not trying to do dumb things with my money. So what do you and your financial advisor do? And he looked at me and said, oh, I don't use financial advisor. I said, oh, so how's that working out for you? And he just kind of, he shot me a look, and you know the look, Diamond, when you kind of,
yes, I do.
You hold up the mirror to somebody, and they kind of get a look, and they go like, oh, rats. And I said, I'm not trying to be critical. I said, here's my question. About 6 months ago, you bought a big flat-screen television surround sound home theater system. Cool. You're really into movies and sports, high-definition stuff. That's great. But I didn't tell you you got lucky because you made a conscious choice in order to do that. And everybody is going to make their own decisions about what they want to do with their life, with their money, with their relationships. You made that choice. I made the choice that I would rather travel than watch television. But I didn't get lucky. I just made a different choice. And he looked at me and said, I never thought about it that way. I said, that's what I do for a living, is I try to get people to think about it a different way.
Yeah, that actually makes perfectly good sense. I mean, it's so simple, but it makes perfectly good sense that because of the choices that we made yesterday, that is why we find ourselves in the position that we are in today.
Absolutely. And in some cases, the unconscious or semi-conscious decisions that we're making today will put us in the position we find ourselves 3 to 5 years from now. I'm sure that you're familiar with the phrase, Diamond, that 5 years from now, we will be the exact same people we are today, except for two things: the books we choose to read and the people we choose to associate with.
That is true. If we're growing and perpetuating, yes, you're right, then those two things should change.
Right. And without, if you don't change that, if you don't read any books and if you don't associate with people who will make you better, 5 years from now, you will be, and myself included, the exact same people we are right now. That doesn't mean we're bad people by any stretch of the imagination. What it means is, though, that we won't be growing into the people that, in some cases, we're supposed to be.
That is true. Now, I have a question. Now, okay, your financial advisor gave you the inspiration to write the book, but how did you develop the characters?
Well, that was kind of, in some ways, you say, it, I think it's a funny story, so I'll share that with you, is when we had this discussion about luck, and I said, well, you know, had, and he kind of explained it to me, and I said, okay, I get it. And I said, but why me? You know, I'm not the six-figure income guy. I'm not that bright. I said, so explain to me how I got this way. And he said, think about this. He said, we met about a decade previously. And he said, think about it that time. He said, I pretty much had to twist your arm to get you to save $25 a month because you thought having a CD collection was a cool thing. And he said, now here you are a decade later. Your friends and family are telling you how lucky you are. He said, and in reality, he said, I didn't change your world. He said, you changed it for yourself with a little bit of encouragement. He said, the interesting thing is, he said, what's the story? And I said, what do you mean, what's the story? He said, how did you go from where you were to where you are now? He said, because I didn't do it for you. He said, you did it for yourself. He said, I was part of the process. And he said, that's the one thing he had learned as an advisor. He said, you can't do things for your client. You can do things with your client, but you can't do it for them or to them. And he said, somewhere in there is the nugget of a story that needs to be told. And he said, you're a good writer. And at that point, I was doing technical writing for a couple of computer software companies, kind of boring computer geeky stuff. And he said, give it a shot. So I did. I played with it, and I played with it, and I played with it, and I produced a couple of chapters. And to be quite honest, Diamond, it was horrible. And I put it aside and got busy with life.
Okay.
And about 2 years later, and I'm sure you're aware, every once in a while, if you're not doing the thing that you're supposed to be doing, life comes along, gives you a little tap on the behind and says, it's time to change.
Yes.
Well, I got downsized out of my job in the technology industry, and as I was cleaning up some files on the laptop to dump all my personal stuff off, I came across this Word file, and its file name was riasom.doc. So it was a Word, Microsoft Word file. I'm like, that's kind of a stupid name for a file. What's in there? And I clicked it open, and what it said right on the front page was, Rich is a state of mind draft. And that's where the RIASOM came from. And it's like, man, I haven't thought about this for almost 2 years. So I read it with slightly different eyes after not having looked at it for 2 years. And I went, you know, this might not be that bad. And so I added another chapter to it, and I sent it to my advisor. I said, send this out to some of your peers and tell them to give it a quick read. At that point, it was only about 20 pages of material, and it had some character profiles in the back and notes that I had built. And I said, let me know if you think, you know, this is a worthwhile endeavor. And within the span of maybe 3 to 5 days, I had about 18 responses from financial professionals who went, my clients could use this. And at that point, I made the decision that the book was going to become my job. And 18 months later, the first 5,000 copies arrived at my door.
Wow. That is amazing how life, like you said, life had pushed you from working in your cushy, comfortable job to being downsized and now forced to do what you were meant to do in the first place, which is create such a fabulous book. What I like most about the book was the fact that all of the characters in the book are completely relatable. Completely. I mean, I can actually picture these people. Would you mind telling our audience about the characters and who they are and where they are in their state of mind and how you came to how we can relate to them? I've read the book, so I kind of understand everything in it. I thought it was wonderful, but let me get a station break for 1 second and say, if you just joined us, you are listening to Secure Your Life, and we are talking to Robert Geniak, who has a fabulous book called Rich is a State of Mind. This is unlike any financial book I have ever read. It is a great read. It reads like a novel, which means the novice of us who are very new to how to deal with our finances can completely relate and understand the characters. So Robert is going to tell us a little bit more about the characters in the book so that I can encourage our listeners to run, don't walk, run and get the book. You can order it on Amazon.com. I'm pretty sure you can probably get it from Robert. They can even get it from you too, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So, yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about this estranged uncle from his family that's living on the edge of town, and his niece and nephew who went to seek him out after they're trying to deal with their young adulthood and finances?
Well, Richard, the central character of the book, Richard Jarvis, was born in late 40s and to a middle child in a family. And his brother and sister and parents all kind of thought he was an odd duck, if there's a good word for that. Didn't want to do things the way everybody else had done things. Decided to go to Vietnam, not in a military sense, but as a photojournalist. And that had a big impact on him. As the book unfolds and you find out more about him, he was at the original Woodstock. He decided to live in a variety of different states. When he came back from Vietnam, he thought the best way to understand his country would be to live in all the different parts of it. And so he was somebody that the phrase that keeps getting used between Richard and John in their conversation is for the experience. If you're going to do something for the experience. And sometimes you'll do things that are uncomfortable. Sometimes you'll do things you don't like. But at the end of the day, it's that collection of experiences that makes people who they are. Because he was a little bit different and his family shunted him aside, at the opening of the book, what we find out is that James and Joyce have just found out that he actually exists. So they decide there must be a reason Mom and Dad kept him hidden from us. Let's go find him. And as I suggested earlier, with a pickup truck in the driveway, satellite dish on the roof, he wasn't what they were expecting. And to be honest, he had been expecting them for a long time. And so they had a great conversation. And the kids, as I refer to them in the book, even though they're in their 20s, the kids were astounded about how much he knew about them, despite the fact they knew nothing about him. And so the question was asked during the initial meeting by James, are you rich? And he kind of laughed it off. He said, well, you know, it's irrelevant. He said, but I have to ask, why do you ask? And he said, well, you know, Mom and Dad have never talked anything about you. He said, I don't know what you do for a living. You know, he said, you've got some stuff. You've got a nice place. You obviously have a nice life. And he said, I do okay for myself. He said, but rich, he said, has nothing to do with your stuff or your money. He said, rich is a state of mind. And for the kids in their 20s, that was an interesting concept because for most of us when we're younger, the only way we associate rich is with how much money we're carrying in our wallet or purse. If we have enough, we're rich. If we don't have enough, we're poor. The concept of being rich in life experiences, friendships, in how we feel about the world around us was a foreign concept to James and Joyce. And I think I meet people all the time who it's a foreign concept for in their 40s or 50s because they become tied to that concept that how much money we have defines who we are.
That is true. It is funny how we come up with those preconceived notions.
And so the conversation unfolded, and Richard said to them, he said, I'd like you to meet my best friend, John, who's financial advisor. And that's how he got incorporated into the book. And he said, I have a deal for you. He said, John and I will teach you everything I think you need to know about personal finance, but you must go out and share it with everybody you know. And he said, if you do that, he said, we're going to have an interesting series of conversations. He said, if you're not interested in doing that, he said, that's okay. He said, we'll still meet and have a nice time. He said, but at the end of it all, he said, this is what I want to leave behind through you. And it opens up the concept of legacy. And I think that is something that many of us think about as we start to get a little bit older. You know, at this point in my life, fortunately, I'm not quite at that point yet, Diamond. But I am, you know, thinking about that, looking out a little bit further. One of the fun things I'm going to get to do tomorrow night is go to my alma mater and present the first annual scholarship that I created last year. for first-year students in the business program at the university I graduated from. And, you know, it's a small thing. It's not a massive scholarship, but it's the opportunity to give something back to a school which helped form a little bit of who I am.
That is great, and congratulations on that. That is such a wonderful thing. We always hear about people going to these great universities. They get a great education, and they go on to make great strides in their life, but they usually never go back. And the ones that do, very rarely do you hear about that.
Well, I was very fortunate in my first year. I had the opportunity to win an award that helped defray some of my expenses. And it's one of those things that I know I didn't write it down anywhere, and I'm not even sure I made it as a conscious goal for myself, was that if I ever got into the position of being able to do so, I would like to do the same thing for other students who come behind when I have the opportunity. And it just so happened that, you know, I've got that opportunity now, and I'm really looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun. I've already received a nice letter from the young man who's won the scholarship, and I am looking forward to having a glass of Diet Coke with him tomorrow night and you know, getting to know a little bit about him and what it is he would like to accomplish by going to the same university that I went to.
That is just great. I mean, wow, and congratulations to the young man that had the opportunity to take advantage of such a great gift that you are offering. And if you just joined us, you are listening to Secure Your Life, and we are discussing the book with the author, Robert Geniak, and the book is called Rich is a State of Mind, and it is the best financial book I have ever read because it is a novel, but it has the great concepts that take it from the starch textbook type of learning to almost like the way we used to learn a long time ago by word of mouth, the folklore telling and stuff like that. I really think your parents or grandparents or mentors actually telling you stories about their lives, and we used to learn that way. And I think that people will grasp the concepts that's in your book a whole lot better and actually have the courage to go to a financial advisor, which a lot of people don't even know where to start. And your book, the concepts in the book, really help the novice who knows absolutely nothing to take the first step. And your characters, the way the young people in here and their challenges that they're going through in their own finances, is so relatable to everybody, no matter whether you're young or old. But especially I remember when I was in my 20s, in college and even fresh out of college, you're like, okay, what is all of this about? And why is it so important to save money? You know, people, when you're young, you don't think about that. The first thing you think about is, oh, I'm away from my parents. I can kind of fend for myself. No one's really over my back or holding my hand. But students are the most poorest people, I think, besides the homeless. Students are really, really poor. And they really rely still on their parents, but they still want to be the quote-unquote adult. But they have no clue. And then the first time that they get introduced to bank account and credit, most of them abuse it. I'm pretty sure, in kind of the way that the characters in the book experience money even before they met their uncle was interesting, to say the least. And then the lessons that they learned along the way, really, it did change their lives completely, so much so that I'm so glad that he did tell them, make sure that you tell everybody. And I think that your message in the book is just wonderful and great. And we do have some callers that would like to join us and probably have some questions for you, if you don't mind.
Well, I don't mind at all, Diamond. Thank you.
Okay. Caller 815, you are on the air, and you are joining myself and Robert. Do you have a question or a comment?
Well, I'd like to make a comment, and hello, Diamond, and hello, Robert.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
Okay, now, what happened, I agree with you with this about getting a financial advisor. Now, originally, I did not have one. And what had happened was that I had developed a concept of saving from my parents who were in Chicago during the Great Depression. So what I had done, I had developed a concept, as I said, of saying, like, putting a couple of bucks aside. So, and I got pretty good at it. Matter of fact, I got so good at it that one of the tellers at the bank suggested that I go see a financial advisor, which I did, and it really paid off. And she went to another bank, and she was working on her own. And I stayed with her until she moved out of town, and I moved also. But when I moved to my present location, I stayed with my same bank. But I got another financial advisor here in the city I'm in now, and it has really paid off. Believe me, it has really paid off. I would advise anybody. One of the main things the teller at the bank was telling me was about getting a financial advisor was that hey, there was a time when you could say, just save, and it would work for you. He said, but those days are gone. It does not work like that anymore. So
I think one of the keys, though, and you hit the nail on the head, is the fact of saving money in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because every once in a while, people will ask me, I'm not a financial advisor, I never have been, but I do respect what they do. But every once in a while, somebody will ask me, Robert, what should I invest my money in? And they're often astounded when I tell them, I have absolutely no idea. And they say, what do you mean you have no idea? You wrote a book on personal finance. I said, I did. But I have no idea what you should invest in because, A, I don't know what your goals are. I don't know what type of time horizon you're looking at. I don't know what your life looks like. I don't know what your job is. There are so many things I don't know that there's no possible way to make a recommendation, even if I thought I did know. But the key that I always follow up my next question to them is, how much money have you saved? Oh, I don't have any money. Then it's irrelevant what you should invest in. Step one, save some money. And it's a funny thing, I think, because over the last maybe decade, maybe even a little bit longer, we seem to have become convinced that we could spend our way to financial success. And you cannot spend your way to financial success. You can only save your way to financial success. And the fact that you were able to do that early on, and it's a message that I'm sure your family and friends, is a great message for you to be able to take to them.
Oh, and something else you had said about wanting a fabulous CD collection. I wanted this fabulous CD collection before they had vinyl, so I wanted a fabulous vinyl collection. But I learned a long time ago, hey, look for the deal. The deal is there. All you have to do is keep your eyes open. The deal is there. You don't have to buy brand new. Use what works also. And a lot of used vinyl, jazz vinyl and blues vinyl that I picked up back in the 60s, it makes me feel so good when I go into a used record shop and I see a record that I paid 50 cents for and they've got it up on the wall and they're asking for $45 and $50. I feel so good when I see that. I mean, not that I would sell it or anything like that. I mean, sell my record, but there's the thing. It just makes me feel so good to know that, hey, I've got that record. I paid $2. I paid a dollar. I paid 50 cents, and it's worth $45 or $50.
Well,
this makes me feel absolutely fantastic.
One of your key points was the concept of new, and I was doing some work with a group of high school students about 4 months ago. And I asked them, I took my wallet out, and I said, I put a bunch of cards in this wallet. And I said, you know, I've got a credit card, and I've got my health insurance card, and a number of other cards in here. I said, what do you think the most important card in this wallet is? And they kind of looked at me, and almost unanimously they said, your credit card. And I said, no, I said, it's important, but I don't think it's the most important card in here. I said, I think it's this one. And I pulled it out and showed them, and it was my library card.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, how can a library card be the most important card in your wallet? I said, because with this, I can get free internet access whenever I need it, if I'm on the road somewhere. I can take out any book I want. I can take out CDs. I can take out movies. I can access magazines, newspapers from around the world. I said, this card opens up a whole world of opportunities. And I said, it's that ability that makes it, this card really, really important. Yeah, with the credit card, I can buy anything I want for the most part. I said, but it's the knowledge that's housed in that library that will change your life.
I do agree. But one thing I found about, in my opinion, about on the subject of using your credit card, I look at a thing like this. If you're going to use your card for a purchase of say $250, if you don't have $250 in the bank that you're doing nothing with, you shouldn't use your card.
No, I believe that absolutely.
Every once in a while,
you'll run into a situation where a credit card can bail you out of a situation. Your car breaks down and you're a long way from home.
Oh yeah.
You know, you need a credit card to travel because, you know, for airline tickets, hotels, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But for the day-to-day stuff, and I always often find it humorous when I see people using credit cards for $5, $6, $8 purchases.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the flip side of that is I know people who are very diligent about using their credit card, and the reason that they do that is it documents money. And these are people that when the bill comes in, the day it comes in, they pay it in full. They've never paid an interest charge. And if that's how they're using it, to them.
Oh,
people.
I think I lost you.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, I think I lost you.
Okay, where did you lose me?
Oh, where you said about people people that will say like they use their credit card, let's say like making $5 and $6 purchases or something like.
And I know a couple of people who do that, and mm-hmm. the reason they do that is that so they can track all the money they spend.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and I tell the characters in the book have a discussion, and Richard urges them, keep track of all the money you spend for the next 2 weeks, anything $1 and above.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go around with their little notebooks, and when they have their next meeting, he sits down with them, and he said, what did you find out? He said, and both the characters found out that they spent a lot of money on things that they.
Oh, uh-oh. You have vanished.
I think we're having technical difficulties, but if you just joined us, you're listening to Secure Your Life. Robert has kind of came in and out. So if you're still with us, Robert, or we have kind of lost part of your message here. But if you just joined us, you're listening to Secure Your Life. We're talking about the great book, Rich is a State of Mind. Our call-in number is 347-884-9343. Maybe we can get Robert back on the line. Again, the phone number is 347-884-9343. Or you can join us in the chat room so that you can learn about how to gain control of your financial future. We're talking about this great book that helps even the novice understand where to start with personal finances. Robert, I don't know whether or not you're still with us.
Oh, did you get back?
I don't know. Robert, are you still there? I'm not sure. I think we may have lost our guest. But we were talking to Robert Geniac, and he was explaining to us about the character in the book and also some friends that he knows that use their credit card for everything including small purchases, and how that is not necessarily a good idea. It's a good way of tracking, but it causes you to use your credit card and you for things that you probably should not have used them for. And then I think, Ron, you were talking about how, your thoughts and feelings on that. I'm going to see if I can try to get Robert back on the line. If you still have any comment or questions, you can please call us at 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343, or join us in the chat room. And we're talking about riches, a state of mind. I'm going to try to get our guests back on the air. Ron, if you have any comments while we're waiting,
okay.
You can
finish
your statement.
Oh, yes. I have a statement I'd like to make. What are you saying about the say people that are making those little purchases? I believe that, in my opinion, I think people end up getting into trouble because they're not tracking those purchases. They're not keeping up with those purchases, and then they look up and they've got a big bill that has come to them, and where did this come from? They just lose track. I think it would be a great idea if you did keep up with it, but I think it's one of the main reasons people get into trouble using their credit card is because they're just using them for like money that ordinarily they would have in their pocket.
Right.
But I guess the secret would be to use a debit card instead of a credit card, because once that's gone, it's gone.
Well, no, your debit card is connected to your bank account.
Uh-huh.
So, and it does usually have the Visa or MasterCard logo on it. So you can use it as you would a credit card. It is also an ATM card too. So it does allow you to have the privileges of a credit card in the sense that you're not carrying cash, and it has the benefits also of being able to track your purchases.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes directly out of your bank account. So therefore, you know, the only bad part about it is if you're not keeping up with exactly what you're spending, then you will end up with a situation where you could end up with insufficient funds, where you withdrew more than what you had in your bank account. And, of course, the banks are definitely going to charge you fees for that. But we're going to take a real short break and see if we can get Robert Geniac back on the line with us so that he can finish telling us about this fabulous book, Riches, a State of Mind. And if you just joined us, you're listening to Secure Your Life. We'll be right back in a short break.
I borrowed the rest. Mommy ate his paper and his head.
back, and you're listening to Secure Your Life. And we are talking with Robert Geniak about Riches of State of Mind. Robert, are you back with us?
I hope I'm back with you, Diamond.
Yes, thank you. We were having a bit of a technical difficulty here.
I believe it might have been my fault on my end, and my apologies for that.
Oh, no problem. We're just happy to have you, and we would like you to finish talking with us about the great book and about, I think the last thing that we heard before our technical difficulties was you were talking about people using their credit cards to track all of their expenditures, but they're using it for, like, small purchases. That's where you left us.
And I think that there's nothing wrong with that process if the moment your credit card statement arrives, you pay it off in full. Because it can be a great way to track. Tracking your $5 and $6 expenses, sometimes what happens is if we went to a bank machine or an ATM with our debit card and we took out $100, and 5 days later we've got $3, we go, where'd the $97 go? And five of it went here and seven went there and 22 went here. But we didn't keep track of where it went, right? We keep track of how much we've got left in our wallet, but we don't necessarily keep track of where it goes. And by using a credit card, and very much a debit card can do the exact same thing, which I did hear you say, Diamond, while I was trying to get reconnected, your debit card does a good job of that too, because when your bank statement comes in, I spent $7 at this store, $22 at this store. So it does allow you to track it. And I'm a fan of whichever way you choose to, but at the end of the day, the best way to become better with your money is understand where it goes.
I agree. I definitely agree. I always encourage all of my listeners, as a matter of fact, to get at least 2 to 3 bank statements and have a highlighter and to highlight all of the things on the bank statement that are not bills. You know, you have your constants, your rent or mortgage, your gas, your light. Those are your bills. But things that if you went to McDonald's, if you went to Starbucks, those things, and actually highlight all of those things on your bank statement and then have pen and paper in hand and add up all of those insignificant purchases. And that is exactly how much disposable income that you really had that you could have done something wiser with.
Absolutely. And some financial advisors or financial writers call it the latte factor, that if you decided to stop having one $5 latte every week, so, you know, $5 a week, let's say it's 50 weeks a year, so the couple weeks you're on vacation, you decide to splurge, $250 a year, 10 years, $2,500, 30 years, $7,500, compounded with interest at, say, even 5 or 6%, now all of a sudden you've got about $16,000 or $18,000 ahead of where you ever were before. The question then becomes, how good does that latte taste?
Not so good.
Now, at the end of the day, and people have said to me, oh, you must not be any fun. And I usually laugh. I said, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, you don't want people to spend any money. It's like, no. So you completely misunderstand. I'm a big fan of spending money. Trust me. I like spending money. But what I try to do on an ongoing basis is spend it wisely and make conscious decisions about where I spend it versus just spending it and then try to figure out what happened to it.
Right. That is so true.
And by no means am I perfect at this time, and I'm still a work in progress myself. I do the occasional dumb thing with money. I said this to an audience a couple weeks ago. I said, you know what I did at Christmas? I bought a juicer. Why? Because I thought it was a brilliant idea. And now here we are 3 months later, and I'm buying juice at the grocery store. Why? Because I can't be bothered to use my juicer.
Yeah, I can completely understand that. At the time, it made perfectly good sense. And you probably told yourself, yeah, I could really use this, and this will be convenient. I could just buy the vegetables and buy the fruit and make my own fresh
juice
and get all the minerals. And so at the time, it made perfectly good sense.
It made perfectly good sense for about 3 weeks.
Until you had to clean it.
And then between the cleaning it, the continual going to the store, and you found out that, you know, you thought that a banana, mango, kiwi, strawberry, blueberry fruit juice combination was going to be wonderful until you had it, and then you went, ew. And then all of a sudden, you know, I can buy orange juice really cheap at the store. And, you know, so I imagine I'll be donating it to a friend of mine who, you know, seems to think the same way I do and is sitting there going, you know, if I had a juicer, I could do all kinds of stuff. Here, don't buy one. Take mine. It's on me.
Well, at least you are, as just like in your book, you're making sure that someone else gets a chance to use it.
You know, and I think what sometimes stops people from taking better control of their finances, Diamond, is they're so worried about the big thing. And everybody asks me all the time, what's the one big thing I can do to take better control of my finances? And I said, that's the problem. There is no big thing. To be successful with your money and your finances means you're doing little tiny things over and over and over and over. I said, trust me, if there was one big thing, everybody would be doing it. But there's no big thing. It's little tiny things. And I'll share this with your listeners. I think you'll like this. A friend of mine came to me about 6 months ago, and he said, what should I invest my money in? I said, Brian, I have no idea. I said, you know that. I said, I've told you that before. And he said, but humor me. He said, what would you invest it in? I said, if I could show you a way to make 10% tax-free on your money, would you do it? And he looked at me, and he looked around at the little coffee shop we were in. He said, is it legal? I said, it's absolutely legal. He said, okay. I said, you need $1,500. He said, well, I don't have $1,500. He said, okay, that's problem number one. So get $1,500 and call me back. So he called me back about 4 months later. And we sat down in the same coffee shop. And he said, so what are we going to do? I said, you've got your $1,500? He said, yes. I said, where is it? He said, it's in my checking account. I said, good, we're done. He said, what do you mean we're done? And I said, Brian, you bank at the same bank I bank at. And for the last 5 years, if not longer, all I've heard you moan and complain about, bank fees are too high, the bank fees are too high, the bank fees are too high. If you keep a minimum of $1,500 in your checking account, there's no bank fees at this particular bank. I said, now, you've got the $1,500 in there. You're going to let it sit there. That's going to save you $11.95 a month. $11.95 a month times 12 months a year is $143. On $1,500, that's 10%, tax-free year after year after year. I said, what do you think of that? And he went, oh. I said, oh? I said, I just got you 10% tax-free on your money, and the best you can give me is oh? He said, well, I thought we were going to do something fun. I said, Brian, that's the fundamental problem. People think personal finance should be fun. It's not fun. It's boring. The moment you try to make it fun, you create the debit crisis and people buying houses in foreign and, you know, people overextending their credit cards. Trust me, that's all fun for a little while, but the end result never turns out well. I said, personal finance is boring, and I just showed you a boring way to make 10%, and you couldn't be the least bit interested.
Wow.
And I suspect your listeners, Diamond, could do the exact same thing with their bank. And every bank's going to have a different amount and different bank fees, et cetera. But that's one of the basic things that I talk to people about looking about. What are the smart little simple things we can do that means we hang on to more money? Because one thing people who get into financial difficulty said, if I only can make more money, I get out of my problem. When in reality, it's not the money you make, it's the money you keep that will determine how successful you are with your finances.
That is so true. That is 100% true. Well, if you just joined us, you're listening to Secure Your Life, and we are talking with Robert Geniak, who has this fabulous book, Rich is a State of Mind. And in our, we only have a few minutes left, and we have one call that is holding, but before I let the caller come on, could you please let us know a little bit about you, how we can get in touch with you and how they can get this great book?
Well, the easiest way to get in touch with me is at the website for the book, and that is www.richisastateofmind.com. So it's the book's title, all spelled out as one word, richisastateofmind.com. And on that website, you can read a sample chapter of the book, you can read some book reviews, you can see videos of me speaking at industry events across North America. You can send me an email if you're so inclined. You can find links where to find the book, such as Amazon.com or chaptersindigo.ca up here in Canada. And by all means, I'd be happy to strike up a conversation with a listener. If you've got a question, as long as they realize I'm not a financial advisor, I'm just somebody who's interested in finance.
Okay. And another thing, we are getting ready to start our book club. And the book club, our book that I've chosen is actually Robert's book, Rich at the State of Mind, because I think this is something that is an easy read. It is something that everyone can relate to, whether you're a novice or an expert in finances. This is something that is a must-have. Every family should have this book. And we're going to start our book club today. We're going to come back in about another month. So next month in April, we're going to have a book review. I would love to have you on again so that we can have feedback from the listeners who actually read the book and how it changed their lives and what they're going to do as a result of reading it. So the caller that is holding area code 312, do you have a comment or a question for Robert?
I just want to give an outstanding applause to him, because that's one of the problems I think anyone nowadays is having, is personal finance problems. And, you know, the one little hobby or two hobbies that you have that consume those extra dollars, you don't necessarily have to feel guilty about it, but you do have to control it. You do need to control it. So there is hope for us who have filed bankruptcy and started over and trying to figure out, you know, what to do. So a great beginning. I'm really excited about the book club and to read the book and get a lot more knowledge and input from him to see how to do things the right way this time. I got a second chance.
Well, I certainly appreciate the feedback, and thank you very much for sharing that. You're absolutely correct that despite whatever financial misadventures we might have had, and trust me, I've had a few of my own, that, you know, the line I often like to use in seminars is that the curve in the road is not the end of the road unless you decide to miss the curve. And so by, you know, starting over, reexamining where we might have made a few mistakes along the way, that's okay. I know I'm going to make a few more in the future. What I try to do is make fewer of them. And when I do realize I'm making one, try to cut short my mistake before it grows too big.
That is profound. That is truly profound. Those of you all who have just tuned in, you are listening to Secure Your Life, and we're talking about our new book club book, Rich is a State of Mind, and the author and speaker, Robert Geniac, has been talking with us for the past hour about this fabulous book. I would love for our listeners to get in touch with you. Could you please give us the website one more time before we conclude the show?
Absolutely. The website for the book is www.richisastateofmind.com. So it's the book's title completely spelled out, richisastateofmind.com. And would be happy to have a chat with any of your listeners, answer an email, direct them to somewhere where they can buy a copy of the book if they're so inclined. Or the one thing, because I mentioned it earlier in the show, go to your local library and ask them to buy a copy so you can get the book and read it for free.
Well, I want to thank all of my guests, and I would definitely want to thank you, Robert, for joining us again, for giving us such a great testimony and of your book. And congratulations again to the young man who won your gift of gratitude on helping him with his studies at your alma mater. And congratulations to you on all of your future endeavors. And thank all of you all for listening to Secure Your Life. Don't cuss, don't fuss. Credit is a must. taking control of your financial future. Thank you for joining me tonight, and I will speak with you all next week. And good night, and thank all of the ones who called in as well as the ones that joined us in the chat room. Until next week, I am your host, Diamond Taylor, and have a great week.